Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It is easy to leave a burning building when it is on fire. But what if that building contains the very thing that gives you life, excitement, peace, joy, courage, and wonder? Will you be an agent of change, or do nothing and eventually leave? If you work in Catholic ministry, business, or education, and need quality content on your website or social media pages, contact The Simple Catholic for copywriting services at thesimplecatholic.blog and click on the writing services page for more information. The Church Militant needs soldiers against the enemy. Enlist The Simple Catholic in this fight for the truth. Good News Ministries of GNM.org. It's the Catholic place for growing your faith. Good News Ministries will provide you with faith-building reflections, virtual retreats, prayer resources, and lots more. All of it is free. Visit GNM.org today.
Hey, good evening, my fellow truth seekers. Glad you could join us tonight here at WCAP 980 AM, where everybody gets it. And welcome to Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meet. Here tonight and every Monday night until 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our culture, into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. All right, tonight, ladies and gentle things, together we delve beneath the surface on the topic of sexuality and natural law. One essential element that separates us from all the other animals is our ability to think. It's what makes us human. Then why is it that when it comes to issues relating to sexuality and gender, we reject thought, reason, and science? It's a question to ask. And to assist us in answering that question and others, and to unlock the mystery and the hypocrisy behind all of this, is my guest and yours. In fact, when you look up the word guest in the dictionary, you see his big smiling head, Mr. Mr. Bob LeBlanc.
My head.
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't that what you see when you look up guest?
Look up guest, my head? I don't think so.
That
I don't
big that. Smiling Bob head.
I'm smiling right now, yes. But that is interesting.
You don't even see a neck. You just see the big round smiling head of you.
Floating head that's smiling.
It's right there next to the definition.
Yeah.
In fact, in place of the definition.
In place of
there is no words definition. It's just your smiling head. Anyway, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Thank you, Paul.
Are you game?
I feel welcome. I am game.
Yeah? Can you breathe beneath here?
The surface?
Yes. Good.
I'm thinking of myself in that submarine going beneath the surface.
Yes, you bet.
Searching out these truths that are beneath.
And you
the
are an ex-submariner, so you know what it means to be beneath the surface as a Navy man.
Yes, I do know what that means in a very real experiential way.
Yes, a literal way.
A literal way, yes. Cool stuff.
And, of course, behind the glass is Cindy, the vinyl girl herself, famous as she is here at WCAP Radio, who has a show three nights a week, one of which is right after Beneath the Surface. Then we go above the surface to Cindy's vinyl vault, don't we, Cindy? Is that what we do?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I thought so. Thanks.
Unless I play the Beatles' Yellow Submarine.
Ah, see? She is so witty.
She is witty, yes.
Who thought something so witty would...
We all live in the yellow submarine.
Absolutely.
That was did you see the movie? That movie?
Maybe a long time ago. I don't remember much of it, if any.
That movie was fun.
Yeah, it was. Was it a cartoon, or at least most of it?
It was mostly cartoon. They had the blue meanies and stuff like that.
Meanies. Okay. Gosh, you remember it, okay.
Do you remember the blue meanies?
No.
They were kind of like policeman-type characters.
Oh, okay.
And they were They were chasing the Beatles all over this weird world, psychedelic world kind of thing.
Okay. Well, That's interesting.
I guess so. Everybody run over to watch that movie.
Our call-in number here at BTS Radio is 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980. And if you'd like to chime in on this or any other topic of your choice, you could simply give us a call or jot down your thoughts at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. What is that? What is that, that icon, that symbol slash? What is it?
Symbols?
Yeah, the symbol on the keyboard.
Yeah. Well,
Facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers.
Right.
What is the slash? Is it just a call to slash?
Yes, it's called, that's, I think that's what the typed key is.
Yeah,
it's called a slash.
It's called,
yeah,
a slash. I thought there, it was something,
well,
else.
Well, it goes a different direction. It's called a forward slash for the
All right,
other
forward
direction.
Slash or backward slash. Okay.
Right.
I gotcha.
You know, and it's
I thought there was
of,
a fancier name for it.
No, I think that is the...
Cindy, you know of anything else? No? Okay. I guess I was right. Forward slash. All right. 978-454-4980. All right. Paul Marano here, Beneath the Surface, till 11 p.m. So let us do it. So, let me start off, Bob. I want to start off very much beneath the surface, and if this bores the audience, I just tell them to hold on for about 10 minutes because we will go... you know, a little bit above this, as soon as I get this down. And I just want to talk about the philosophy behind natural law, which basically is thought, all right? And I'll start off with this sentence. Science is based on reason.
Sure, I'll do that.
Now, science without reason is simply the experience of phenomena. And that's similar to what animals do.
Okay.
Yeah, they come across something, they sniff it, they see it. There's no thinking behind it. There's no reasoning.
Right. There's no asking why behind all of this.
No seeking of causes, consequences, etc. All right. So science is not only based on observation and the senses, obviously, but it's based on reasoning. Now, creating theories and hypotheses presupposes that the world has certain patterns and laws that are reasonable and discernible through the human mind.
I agree. I think everybody, anybody who claims to be a scientist realizes that in order for the experiment to work or to detect something, whether this experiment succeeds or fails, your underlying premise here is that the world somehow acts according to certain laws.
Right. And hence, it's intelligible by the mind because the mind seeks a certain logos, a certain pattern, certain laws... within reality. All right, so science is based on reason, which is based on thoughts, as well as the senses, of course, which accompany it. Now, as you know, Aristotle came up with an understanding that there are four causes to everything.
Yes.
All right. Now, I want to break this down for the audience a little bit to make it simple for those who haven't studied philosophy. There's the formal cause, the material cause, the efficient cause, and the final cause.
Right.
Now, the formal cause speaks of what something is.
Mm-hmm.
It's the form or the identity.
Right. You say if you name an object, like a dog or a cat,
right,
you're naming that formal cause. Yeah, is it?
Yes, the whatness of it. Yeah. So what? Now, the material cause speaks of not what, but from what.
Mm-hmm. I'll buy that.
So if the what is the Statue of David, for example, the material cause was the slab of marble.
Yes. Or copper.
Or copper or whatever.
Or whatever it was that made the material that made up that Statue of David. Yes.
Right. So everything has a material cause from which it is created.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's the formal cause, there's the material cause, form and matter. Then there's the efficient cause, which answers the question by what?
Right.
So you know, what made the slab of marble turn into the Statue of David?
Right.
And it would be the artist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he would be the efficient cause that had the form in his mind, and he transfers it by his actions from his mind to the slab of marble, which is the matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's the efficient cause. And then you have the final cause, which answers the question, for what?
To what end going toward?
Right.
Yes.
Why? For what end? For what? And of course, you could answer the question. Well, for what end? So people can know the humanity of a particular Old Testament figure, right? The final cause of the Statue of David.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so they could look at him and say, ah, that's what it's... Yeah.
To be educated.
Yes,
on a certain...
it describes something. Actually, you look at like something like stained glass windows or something like that. They would have an entire biblical story in the entire stained glass window.
Yeah. So every object has an end or a purpose.
Some sort of purpose, yeah. Yes.
All right, so there's the form, matter, efficient cause, and final cause. Modern man tends to ignore the what and the why. Which are the first two words spoken by the human species, after mama and dada?
Yeah, this is such a strange thing that happens for modern man. It kind of denies the basic sort of thing that we have to do all along. Yeah. We can't... I don't know that we can really avoid the what and the why, but we do. In certain circumstances, we do that.
Well, let's think about that for a second. I want the audience to just try to ponder that a little bit. We just went through the four causes. The what, the from what, the by what, and the for what, which is the why. So the what, the from what, the by what, and the why. Modern man tends to try to ignore the what and the why, which are... the very first things the human beings say after mama and dada, you know, what? What's this? What's this? And, of course, with a few more brain cells, it's why. Mm. Why? This seems to be what distinguishes us from the other animals. I'm trying to understand the what of things and the why of things.
Yeah, the thing that really amazes me is when a little child, you know, goes and looks at some sort of object and says, doggy or cat. When it comes down to it, you know, if you were asked to come up with some sort of description of a cat or a dog, and you know, a set of rules, or so to speak, I'm not sure if you could, any normal person could come up with that description that divides cats from dogs. But yet you have small little children that you go, what is that? That's a dog. That's a cat.
Small children not only learn language without taking, you know, 4 years of college English,
right,
but they understand the categories within language, which you know, points to the fact that human beings have minds.
Right. There's something communicated. There's something intelligible in the word that allows us to communicate a truth from one person to another person.
Right. And we can distinguish various essences or various whats. You know, this is chair, this is television, this is dog, this is cat. It's absolutely, if you think about it, it's absolutely amazing what us humans do.
It is.
Now, the second thing that they say is, you know, as babies is why? Why? And of course, that's a very important
thing. And the thing is that why never ends.
You know, it never ends, but I would say this, it shouldn't end. I think a lot of people sort of just give up on the why. Because they just begin to get cynical and don't really care. But, yeah, I mean, that why within us really says something about our humanity, that we're curious beings, that we're intelligent.
We want to uncover the rock and look what's underneath it there.
Yes.
Or go beneath the surface on a radio program.
Yeah. Now, I have no question. That's what this show is all about. But I have a theory, a running theory, as to why, again, there's the why, as to why we tend to, as a modern culture, our modern society, try to deny the what and the why. And there's a reason for this, and I think there's a consequence to this also, this movement. The reason, and I'll just propose this, by denying what we are as human beings, we can deny the how. By denying the what, we deny the how, in as much as how we're meant to operate and behave. And if we do this, then we become our own gods, in as much as we can then create what is right and good rather than conform to it. So denying what we are, we're able to deny how we are meant to behave.
I suppose there's something.
Well, because activity is born out of being.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're a cat, you meow.
Right.
If you're a tree, you grow and have leaves. And
right. But this sort of stuff here is a little bit different from human beings, because you would say they're acting according to their nature, their instincts.
Yes.
You know, if they acted differently, we would say there's something wrong. They're not acting in accord with their catness.
Yeah.
Or something
like
that.
And of course, that's behind what natural law is.
Yes.
A person says there's something wrong. They're not acting according to their humanity.
Right. It's a very interesting word, humane.
But, I'm sorry, but if you deny that there is a humanity or a human nature, then you don't have to, at least in your own mind, act according to your humanity.
I see. It does seem to follow. Though I think people think in contradictory ways. I think what you see here is kind of what happens when we're talking about something in a narrow sense, but in a broader sense, I think people still think the way they should if they do think about it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, if they do think about it, but I think that modern man chooses what to deny here.
Right.
When it comes to natural law and what it means to be human. Because
yes.
if they deny that, then they can deny what it means to act human,
right,
or behave human.
I do see a lot of that.
Yeah.
The denial of what human beings should be doing, what they ought to be doing.
Right, exactly. And that's, to me, that's my theory of the reason behind the denial of the what and the why. But then I see a consequence of denying the what and the why. And that is, the consequence of this project is to imitate or become more like beasts. I think that's what happens.
There is that kind of funny thing about that. If I were to put my Christian hat on this,
yeah.
we reach and try to grasp and be gods.
Yes.
And then we find ourselves enslaved,
yes,
by our lower nature.
And it's funny because this is the exact irony of this movement of denying the what and the why of things. The irony is that that actually reasoning and thinking makes us more godlike, and rejecting reason, rejecting thinking, rejecting the what and the why
makes us more like animals.
Exactly, brings us down to the level of non-rational animals. So here we are, and I'm just gonna end this with a theological note, you know, relating to sacred scripture. This is exactly what scripture tells us. In as much as Genesis 3:5, the ultimate seduction of the serpent was, you will be like gods who will know good and right and wrong. And that's exactly what human beings were trying to do, to be more like, or to be their own God. And in doing so, Genesis chapter 3, verse 7, they realized they were naked. In other words, they were stripped of grace, but then immediately in Genesis 3:21, God clothes them, not with supernatural life, which is grace, which they lost because of sin, but clothes them with animal skins.
Hmm.
And there you have the symbolism of the consequence of what happens when you deny the truth.
Right.
You are stripped of grace, and you are clothed with animal skins, symbolizing we become less like God, more like animals.
Right. There is one philosophical ethical theory called emotivism, which denies that there can be really any sort of rational thinking about morality. It's more of the sort of thing, if it's good.
Yeah.
Hooray! It's good. Our feelings,
right,
are good about it, and if our feelings are something's wrong, like murder,
yeah,
we feel very bad about it in some sort of way. Boo hiss! But whether there's something rational underlying these feelings is something that emotivism denies.
And I think emotivism is another extension of what we're talking about here, of denying the proper why, or even thinking about it rationally. As to why, what we are as humans, and why we are created, why certain things are created the way they are. So that's my opening spiel about the fact that we tend to reject thinking when it comes specifically to natural law relating to human sexuality. That's today's...
We do reject thinking, and I guess I'll go tear into what I'm thinking here.
Yes.
For me, it's really amazing that we look at various things, and this is really at a kindergarten level, first grade, second grade level.
Mm.
What are your eyes for?
Yes.
Your eyes are to see, right?
Yes, that is the end or purpose of an eye.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have no problem with that. In fact, I talk to people who wear glasses, and why do they wear glasses? Obviously, there's something deficient in my seeing that I need some sort of correction.
Yes.
So we have some sort of idea about what our eyes, what is the final end? What is the purpose for our eyes?
Why do we have eyes? Right.
Yeah,
what are they for?
Yeah. What are they for? And we have these various things to correct, you know, if they're not operating well. The other the other obvious one is ears, you know.
Yeah.
In ears, you're meant to hear with your ears.
Yeah.
And if you don't hear well, sometimes you get a hearing aid that's placed into your ear. So there's these various things that we have, and we have a digestive system, you know, and all these various things where we look to the purpose of what they are doing within our entire organism.
Yes. So then the what and the why of parts of us are clear, and there's a consensus on that. It's called science. We understand that eyes are for seeing, ears are for hearing, digestive system digests food so that we can have nutrition. So there's certain purposes and ends relating to these body parts.
Right. And this is, I think, the real amazing thing, that we actually know something about how we're kind of put together. And we also actually know something about our species as a whole.
Okay.
And I guess what I'm pointing to, and this is the very critical thing here, which I've encountered people, you know, on internet forums and, you know, Facebook posts who will deny what I'm about to say. And the thing is that it's so amazing about the word that we use for these particular organs. We call them reproductive organs.
Right.
Or we call them genitalia, which actually is kind of comes from the Greek word, which says the same thing. It's about
the reproductive system.
The reproductive system.
So like the digestive system, like the endocrine system, like the cardiovascular system, the reproductive system has a meaning and a purpose.
Yes, absolutely. And that is the funny thing that you encounter is that sort of denial. No, it's not really about that.
Yeah.
I have kind of a story, and it's a dated story here.
Okay.
It was 1995. I remember the year.
We're all about stories here on Beneath the Surface.
Well, I am, but I'm not sure about you. But
all right, I'm all ears.
All right. So, this is when the Republicans took control of Congress. This is that time period.
94 ish.
No. It's after the election. 94 was the election, but they actually took their office. The control actually happened in 1995 is when everybody was seated. And I had my eyes glued on C-SPAN. I was watching, things, a momentous change. The Republican Party was actually in charge of Congress for the first time in
a dog's age.
Yeah, very long time.
Yep.
And so I was watching C-SPAN, and there was this journalist, and I don't actually remember the question that he asked. I'll try to give us some sort of sense of what it was.
Mm.
The question that he asked, and it had to do with if heterosexual people can do this, why can't homosexual people do that? And the question actually got me. I was thinking, I'm going, you know what? He has a point, because I was thinking about things like premarital sex and things like that. And I'm going, you know what? He seems to be a point. If heterosexual people are allowed to what we would call sin back then in 1995, maybe still, I hope, but if heterosexual people can sin, then why can't homosexual people sin?
Well, what do you mean by can sin? I mean, everybody can sin.
Well, what I'm saying is...
Why shouldn't they be allowed to?
The thing is that people were looking at premarital sex at this time, and they were... You know, this is the kind of the tail end of the sexual revolution, and people are looking at it and they're saying, well, it's not really so bad. It's okay if we do these.
So in other words, if premarital sex is morally acceptable,
right?
If the culture is saying that, then why can't homosexual activity be moral, the same level of moral acceptability?
Yes, that was...
Okay.
And I came, right. I came and, I was, and I thought about it and I said, oh...
Okay, we're hearing that, which means we have a break in a few seconds. We want to finish this thought, and then we'll finish it.
Okay, well, so I started thinking about, you know, the comparing the two, and my first conclusion was that this journalist, he had a point.
Yeah?
He had a point, and let's go to the break from there, and then we can pick up
and the point is that there's some similarity there in terms of the moral value.
Right.
Of both of these things, and we're going to continue this thought. We're going to continue this thought right after this break here on Beneath the Surface Radio. My name is Paul, this is Bob, and we'll be back after this break. Don't go away. And we are back. Beneath the Surface Radio here at WCAP, where everybody gets it, 980 on your dial. I'm Paul Morano. My guest tonight is Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Cindy Behind the Glass is coming up after this show at 11 p.m. with Vinyl Vaults. And our topic on Beneath the Surface tonight is sexuality and natural law. So, Bob, before the break, what were we talking about?
We were talking about this insight that I got in 1995.
And we were in the middle of the story. Okay, so you were, just to, for those who just tuned in, you were in 1995 when the Republican Congress, I'm not sure what politics has to do with this yet, but when they came into office, you were watching television and somebody came up with the notion, if premarital sex is morally acceptable, then why isn't... homosexual sex morally acceptable, and you,
right.
In your thinking, by the way, were you reverted back to Catholicism?
Oh no, I was out of the church during this time.
Okay, and you were thinking, at least rationally, this kind of makes sense. How can you condemn one and not the other?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
There I was, and I said, boy, this guy made sense, but something within me said, you know, homosexual sex is wrong. You know, you have to understand the time period.
Yeah.
I think 90% of the people probably thought that that was in the same spot that I was, that it's...
Yeah, so the culture at that time was premarital sex is okay, but homosexual acts are wrong.
Right.
At that time, okay.
At that time.
All right. But you were saying, wait a minute, what kind of sense does this make?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I gotcha.
And so what is it... That makes things okay, and my first dead end actually was, you know, does marriage sanctify these acts?
Sanctify as in make good, make holy, and justify.
Justify the acts, and I'm going, no, you know, that was my first dead end was to say, you know, it's I'm talking about the homosexual act.
Okay,
for me it just seemed. That it was just arbitrary to make that the make marriage the thing that makes things either good or bad.
And when you were thinking of marriage, were you thinking of legal marriage, civil marriage?
I was thinking of legal, not sacramental marriage or anything like that.
All right. So that, if that wasn't the case, then where'd you go?
So I started looking at the various things that you know. All these various sex acts that I guess that you would definitely see on a pornography film or something like all these, all these various sorts of things, sodomy, I don't know what the masturbation, there would be all these various acts. And I'm trying to look at the entire
realm
of, you know, what people would call sexual acts in
in accordance
in a broad,
with,
very broad sense.
And you are probably thinking as a rational person as to how does this fit in accord with human nature?
Right. This is
and,
where
and this, this wasn't religious faith. This was just your rational mind.
This is just my rational mind. Okay. And I kept on thinking about, you know, what is it that distinguishes all these various acts? And then finally it came to me what we talked about earlier. We're talking about the reproductive organs here, the reproductive system.
Okay.
What is it for? And then things started falling into place here as far as that. I'm going, well, the homosexual act doesn't lead you toward any sort of reproduction. Masturbation does not do that.
Yeah.
You have all these various acts that happen.
So these acts pervert the natural purpose or natural end.
Right.
Natural end of the function. Okay.
But I'm still not done yet.
Yeah.
I'm still not done yet because I'm still a secular person and contraception still seems like a good idea. And I'm going, well, wait a second here. If we have contraception, then I can't say that the homosexual act is wrong.
You can't. You're absolutely right.
You know, there's absolutely no way you can get from here to there. You can say an emotivist thing, it's icky to do that.
Right.
But you can't actually say it's wrong.
Nothing reasonable.
Nothing reasonable.
And I imagine this is because at that time you were thinking both acts, a contraceptive act and a homosexual act, both pervert and intentionally thwart the natural end of human sexuality. Okay.
And that is simply where I got to. That was my first steps back into the Catholic Church, is realizing that there seems to be a center behind these things. It's not just arbitrary rules. We're going to pick certain sex acts where we're going to say they're okay,
right,
and we're going to look at a different set of sex acts and say they're not okay. There's actually some sort of rationale behind where all these surround here.
And it all relates to a respect for human nature.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is only the only avenue to human fulfillment.
Right. Well, I was not thinking like that.
Okay,
then.
You weren't thinking that.
But
then.
I was just at a very, very simple point realizing that if contraception is moral, than anything is. And to tell you the truth, it was many, many years later that I found a statement that was done by a very famous English philosopher, Elizabeth Anscombe.
Okay.
She wrote in a book edited by Dr. Janet Smith, and right in the middle of this essay, she went, if contraception is allowable, and morally acceptable, then anything is. I'm paraphrasing what she said, but I'm going, it kind of gobsmacked me there. It's like,
now let's think about that for 2 seconds, because I'm sure a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, if two loving people don't want to have children at this time, et cetera, et cetera, how is this morally equivalent to homosexual acts, for example?
Well, I'm not saying they're
you're not saying they're exact.
They're exactly the
but
same.
But you are saying that the what makes both of them immoral is shared, and that is the delinking of sex from baby making, love from life, and the thwarting of the natural end and natural purpose.
Right. For me, it was much more simple. It was just the thwarting of that natural end of the reproductive act. Mm. And then later things, I started getting much more nuanced in my thinking, because you can't. That's just kind of a start. It's not the end.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, the next step, obviously, is that what is it that makes premarital sex wrong? What is it that makes adultery wrong? And then
questions.
You start looking at, well, the reason is marriage and the purpose of marriage.
So then there are two sort of sub purposes that you were considering: the purpose of sex and the purpose of marriage.
Right.
And how do they go together?
Yes.
From a reasonable
perspective.
Okay.
And I think most people can look at the information and say marriage is a good toward raising a family, toward raising children. I mean, single parenthood is very, very devastating for children. The children need a mother and a father.
Yeah, I mean, economically, psychologically, emotionally.
Right.
It's not optimal.
At these various levels, and you realize that you have the two spouses. What they're doing is they're cooperating together in raising these children, which is difficult in other ways.
In helping create these children and in raising them.
Yes. Yes. And so you start coming into something a little more deeper. You start realizing, well, you can't just have the father there, you know, to help make the children.
Yeah.
The father is actually needed there for a much more extended period of time, in which we start informing the children. And so I was starting to think, I'm saying, well, that means that marriage has to be a lifelong arrangement.
I'm seeing that you're simply putting two and two together here, in as much as first you said, well, sex, like any bodily function or system, has a purpose.
Right.
And that certainly includes reproduction. Now, if that's the case, then having children, which is reproduction, also needs a certain environment and a certain context.
Yes.
So sex and babies and family are all linked here, it seems like, from a rational perspective.
From a rational perspective. And so there I was, you know, at this point, and it seemed to me very much, you know, there are things we can talk about, certainly, where people will ask, well, do, you know, the parents need to be fertile in order to get married.
And we
can
talk about that later, but you weren't thinking of that at this time.
No, I was just thinking about what are these purposes? What are these ends that things are going toward?
Now, do you find it fascinating that it seems like throughout most of human history, people knew this? This was like very simple understanding of what we are.
Right, right. No, it is. Yeah. To me, it seemed... Why am I discovering this now?
Right,
because,
right.
Like I said before, this seems like this is very much, you know, at kindergarten, first grade, maybe a little bit older, but this is not something that a mature person should be discovering here.
It's funny you say that, but at what point did you realize that you were sort of pulled into the mud of cloudiness when it came to this issue that our culture has been in for the past 40 to 50 years? When did you realize that?
Well, this is all part of the process. That's why I mentioned the Republicans and stuff like that, because it's why I can date this event.
Okay.
That's why I can date this, is I realized this was, we went over through this in a relatively quick period of time, but I was pondering this, you know, over at least weeks, if not months, of time, and I was churning this over in my head, and finally, you know, the tumblers or whatever clicked, the safe was opened, and you know, there was no going back, because it all made sense. It all had a central core that we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's basically what you're telling me is that you actually remained acting like a human being. Which, you know, we start off asking what and why as babies, and we continue to try to figure things out. Whereas, and you know, mostly in today's culture, that's sort of washed out of a person in their adolescence, because they are sort of pressured into believe the non-reality of our culture that feeds them. But you are saying, no, I'm going to continue to think as a human being is supposed to.
Well, this got me, I mean, my friends at the time, They would have looked at me. What is this, you know, three-eyed monster talking to me here? You know, I was not surrounded by people who would reinforce this sort of thinking. I was going against the grain very much.
And ironically, this does reinforce what we talked about earlier in the show, that people stopped thinking about this realm of humanity.
Yeah, but there is one thing I do acknowledge. If you think about contraception just at the surface, you can sort of see, well, what is really so wrong about that? I mean, it's not an obvious immoral sort of thing. You actually have to kind of think about the purposes of things.
Well, you have to
and
think.
Why you're doing that. Yes, you have to think.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you talked to a person who is on the surface and I think their first instinct would be, well, we want to be able to control the amount of children that we have and, you know, this, that, and the other thing.
And that is why we as human beings were never meant to live on the surface.
Right, right.
Because we can't see everything that's simply on the
surface.
But
I think you understand what I'm trying to say is most people, they just stay on the surface of things and they say, why could this possibly be wrong?
Sad but true.
Yeah. And so... I found myself kind of a loner when it came to this sort of thinking, and that's the way things kind of sat until I started actually looking at Catholic teachings on this sort of thing.
So, in other words, human thought, human reasoning, led you as a philosopher to the Catholic faith.
Well, I'm not sure if I would have called myself a philosopher then.
Well, I use the term loosely as a thinker.
Right.
As somebody who thinks.
If we could say philosophy is really just common sense, then I think we have something here. I was thinking...
And human reasoning.
It was using human reasoning and something not terribly difficult, I think, something that we would have called common sense in another day and age.
978-454-4980 is our phone number here at BTS Radio, 978-454-4980. Talking to Mr. Bob LeBlanc, not to be confused with the Bob LeBlanc that actually has a show here on Saturday mornings on WCAP, but my Bob LeBlanc, the second Monday night of the month Bob LeBlanc for Beneath the Surface, who sometimes fills in other days of the month.
Yes, I do.
Or other weeks, I should say. So that's where your reasoning took you. Then what occurred?
Well, then I started encountering Catholic thinkers. Chesterton was a very first read human being, and I was reinforced as well when I first read Humani Vitae.
Which is the encyclical letter by Pope Paul VI in 1968 on human life.
On human life, and it was the encyclical that opposed contraceptives.
Well, it's reinforced what was always taught in the church for the past for the past 2,000 years.
And so, when I read that, the experience was of being illuminated even further. I started reading this and I'm going, this guy is making sense. He's making sense. He's making sense. He's making sense. He's making sense. I mean, I was getting so very excited about this small little, 20-page encyclical?
It's actually very simple for those who, you know, like reading comic books. This isn't something above your head.
No, it's not.
It's a simple encyclical letter, it's found online.
I found that it was not talking about things that were above my level.
Yeah,
I found it very, very reinforcing. I guess. And it was one of those things that kind of told me as I was exploring the Catholic Church that I was in the right direction.
And it was very, very simple, but very reasonable.
Right, and
consistent.
And it was this that led me on my path towards trying to learn about philosophy. Dr. Janice Smith wrote a very thick book talking about Humani Vitae. I can't remember.
Humani Vitae, a reader? Is that
no,
it?
No, that was the what she edited, which was various authors. No, she wrote by herself.
Humani Vitae, a generation later.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Right.
And I started reading that, and I'm starting to encounter all these philosophical terms that she's introducing, trying to understand the underlying basis beyond that which I got in 1995, and it was like giving me brain candy. You know? I mean, I was just eating this stuff, and I'm saying, where can I find out more about this philosophy stuff?
Yeah, I mean, she was, and that book was one of my favorite books of all time.
And it is so tightly reasoned.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
There is, you know. I mean, I didn't understand everything because I didn't understand all the philosophical terms that she was using. But the arguments seem very sound. And I'm going, well, if they are sound, they're going to pass the test as I investigate this deeper.
Very good. Yeah.
And so I'm firm. I think anybody can grasp this sort of thing about why contraception is wrong. Why it's not because the Catholic Church hates homosexuals that they say that the homosexual act is wrong. It's not because, you know, they don't like sex that they say that the church says that premarital sex or adultery is wrong.
Well, these are all, of course, silly things that people that don't understand would say.
And the thing is, I went along and understanding what the church taught about things, you start discovering, wait a second, the Catholic Church isn't hating sex. The Catholic Church actually thinks it's a really great thing.
Actually, yeah, it's the opposite.
It's the opposite. It's actually a very holy sort of thing.
It's so good that it needs to be used properly.
And, right.
In other words, the more valuable something is, the more you need to treat it more valuably.
As it is valuable.
Yeah. Why do you think, as a reasonable person, that the entire moral law, within the entire moral law, there's, you know, people still pretty much, even though we are weak and we, you know, transgress these things now and then, most people still have a consensus that stealing is wrong, morally wrong. People still have a consensus, even though there's a lot of liars out there, that lying is morally wrong.
Yeah, but we're seeing a weakening in these sorts of
things. We are seeing a weakening
of
those.
And I think one of the reasons for this weakening is a utilitarian sort of ethic.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, the sexual act is so pleasurable. Yeah. You know, if you're just measuring that and you're going, okay, it's got to be a great thing to do at other times because you're not measuring whether the act itself is good, right, or wrong, but you're measuring the kind of the consequences of what happens. You're going to get a lot of pleasure from this, bounced against consequences that you're not quite allowing yourself to actually see further down.
When it comes to killing, I would say that most people still have a consensus other than before birth.
Right.
Yeah.
But what you see with any sort of these ethics, there's this rationalization that occurs. You know, like for stealing, you know, well, I'm working for this very wealthy company. You know, they won't mind if I steal this, that, or the other thing. There's that kind of, it's not really so bad.
Well,
when
you're in that situation, some people might succumb to that kind of false rationalization. But when you're not in the situation, most people, when they look objectively, is what I'm saying, when they with a cold-blooded looking at the notion of stealing, would still say, taking things that aren't yours is wrong.
Right. And people will know this when they're the victim.
Yes.
That's the interesting thing about this is that a lot of people don't realize that there's really a victim involved in what's happening. People will say, well, consent is really the measure of all these things, whether they're right or wrong. And I think people really aren't thinking this through. And one of the things that you famously brought up to me, you know, is the question of slavery. If people consented to their slavery, would it be morally right?
Right, exactly.
And to
make that question even broader, is it ever okay to abuse somebody if they simply want you to?
Right, right. And
now, some people would say, if they want you to, no matter what you do to them, it's not abuse.
Right. And just to do a slight shift here, because I think a lot of people would say, well, it's not abuse that we're doing. People would say, you know, they might admit that they're using somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where people kind of miss what's going on here, especially when we're talking about fornication or premarital sex or something like that, is the idea of you're going to use her for pleasure, and she's going to use you for pleasure. You're both using each other.
Consensually.
Right, but you're what you're doing here, what you're doing is you're treating the other person as an object that will be used to gratify you.
Instead of
viewing that person as a person. So you view the person as an object rather than as a subject.
I would agree with that, but some people, and we only have a couple minutes left, but some people would argue that by virtue of respecting their free will and their consent, you are respecting them as a person as you enjoy them physically. How would you respond to that?
Oh, I need to think about that.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that what people are missing is the notion of what is good.
Right.
That whole notion of what is good for us is out the window when the adult consent ethic is the primary ethic in society.
Right. You're really not looking at them. You're looking at yourself and what you get.
And only on a surface level, because what is good for you is also not in these acts.
Right. Because it's truly a kind of a funny thing that these sexual acts have been reduced to a loving act when in fact love is something actually at a much higher level. It's actually willing the good of the other person that's happening, and when you're involved, when you're focused on just the pleasurable aspect of this, you turn inward. You're not turning outward.
And you're not acting in the proper context of which you reasoned out just a few minutes ago.
Right.
Because just acting for pleasure or for immediate gratification is not taking into consideration the proper context which makes or which would make the act good. And you just reasoned out through reason alone that the proper context for sexual activity is the marriage between a man and a woman.
Yes, it is the conjugal act between man and wife that does this.
So even if there's consent, even if there's mutual using, you're saying that even when that's the case, it's still an immoral act because it doesn't take into consideration the proper context, which would make the act good.
Yeah, there's a recent thing that colleges have been doing is having these legal forms to actually verify the consent and stuff like that. These people, I think, are backing their way into the idea of marriage again. You know,
they are backing their way. That's a very good point, despite themselves,
because that is really true consent when you say "I do,"
right,
and the other person says "I do." You know there's consent. The real problem is you don't know what consent is outside of actually going through the marital vows.
Which means, it seems to me, you're saying it's reasonable to say that consent for the mutual giving of each other in the sexual act is only good and proper and right and healthy within that marriage.
Within the context of marriage, yes.
A lot said. We could do another 25,000 hours on this. But thank you, Mr. Bob.
You're welcome,
Bob. Natural Law and Human Sexuality. Good conversation as usual. I'm Paul Morano. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week.
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at CatholicSingles.com. Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.